big show for you here today. It is part two of our wide receiver prospect preview. We're going through the rest of the guys in the top 100 on the consensus big board. Elijah Surratt, does he project as an outside receiver or an inside receiver in the NFL? Chris Bell, most boom bust prospect in the entire draft. And what glue guys do we potentially like on day two of the NFL draft this year? All that and more coming up with Ray Garvin. Big show for you here today. Big show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because it is part two of our wide receiver prospect deep dive. We're going to break down the rest of the guys that we didn't talk about last Thursday, the rest of the guys that are in the top 100 of the consensus big board, and joining me to do that, as he has each of the last 3 weeks or so, it is our guy, Ray Garvin. Ray, what's going on, buddy?
What's going down, baby? I get so excited to get on here and talk about you. And I always kind of do this at the beginning of every show, the pre-show banter that we have behind the scenes before we get on here. I'll just say, I'm a little disappointed in you and the producers today in this disparaging of the greatest holiday in the history of holidays, Christmas, right? You know, I got my Christmas mug. We're talking about inflatable decorations. We're talking, and it's just Grinch City around here at Yahoo. I don't know what's going on, but hopefully as we get through the deep dive, we turn this thing around, baby.
I mean, listen, I just wasn't expecting to see you drinking out of a freaking Christmas mug on April 9th here, okay? Like, I'm not in the Christmas spirit on April 9th. I'm in the, hey, let's get to draft day spirit already. That's what I'm feeling here, man. So, you know what? It was a good, lively pre-show banter about Christmas and, you know, some of my opinions, your opinions, and, you know, it's fitting, right? This is what the show is going to be about. This is what draft season's about. It's about comparing different opinions and processes, and it sure sounds like you and I have different processes towards the Christmas decoration season.
Very different ends of the spectrum here. If this was a show about Christmas in April, you and I would butt heads in a major way, but you know what, Harmon? We just took our lights down last month, so I don't want to hear it, man. We are in the Christmas spirit here at the GQ household, man.
Yeah, we would be embracing debate on the Christmas decoration process, you and I, that is for sure. And we'll see how much debating we do about these wide receiver prospects, because we have a ton to talk through here. We're going to go through each of these prospects' strengths, weaknesses, ceiling, and floor. And again, we're deep diving on the guys that are like the rest of the top 100 on the consensus big board. Last week, we talked about the top 7 prospects in the class. This week, we're going to be talking about Elijah Surratt, Chris Bell, Jermy Bernard, Zachariah Branch, Malachi Fields, Antonio Williams, Deion Burks, Skylar Bell, Ted Hurst, and Bryce Lance. We'll also do our Diamond in the Rough segment at the end. So if you're looking for a breakdown today, somehow you missed last week's show, and you're like, wait, you're not talking about Carnell Tate? You're not talking about Mekhi Lemon? That was last week. Talked about the top guys last week. So if you don't see their names on the screen right now, you did not hear me just list them off for the audio folks, go back to last week's episode, then dive into kind of these guys that are going to be more of our day two, potentially day three options here. And it's a really interesting crop here, I would say, Ray. Like, there are some guys that are going to be, I don't know, that are going to maybe not be fantasy superstars. Maybe there will be a guy that's a fantasy superstar if they land in the right spot. But I do see some interesting potential contributors from this group here.
Yeah, very interesting is the operative word and the correct word to use here. We've got Elijah Surratt at the top. We talked about his teammate, Omar Cooper, on part one of that show. You got another Alabama receiver. You've got slot kind of merchant speed guys. And then you've got some, you know, when you're looking at the Bell and the Hurst and the Lance, I wouldn't say unknown, but sort of lower level competition wide receivers that do some things well. I know that you're looking at a lot of these guys and charting them, as do I, and just having watched them throughout the college football season. So, I mean, as we go through this, I really do want to have kind of that back and forth dialogue, not just about our own personal thoughts and feelings about the individual player's skill set, but how that archetype of receiver, Matt, might fit in today's NFL, even if the first round draft capital isn't there for some of these players.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, archetype is probably going to be said 50 times on this podcast because all of these guys are so, so different. And that sort of helps us sort into what they might become in the league. But let's start with our first name here, which is Elijah Surratt, the Indiana wide receiver. Again, as you mentioned, we broke down Omar Cooper last week on the show. And the funny thing is here, Ray, and I know you know this better than me because you actually watch college football during the season much more than I do. There was large stretches of the season where, yeah, Omar Cooper's the guy getting all the hype during draft season, but Elijah Surratt was the guy for Indiana. So talk to me about what you see from Elijah Surratt as a draft prospect.
I mean, he was the guy coming into the season. Nobody was clamoring for Omar Cooper Jr. to be the first wide receiver off of the board from Indiana. It was Elijah Surratt. Everybody was expecting that. And he had a really good season, 65, 830, 15 touchdowns, 6'2", 210, big frame, hand size is good, production is solid. You know, one of the cool things that, you know, going through each one of his games this year in college football, the accumulation of stats starts from week one and it technically finishes throughout the playoffs. So all of that stuff is included. But when you're looking at him, he led every draft eligible receiver in the country with 29 receptions, 391 yards, and 9 TDs against man coverage in 2025. So this is a bigger player that can win against that. But the same way that we talked about Omar Cooper Jr., this was an RPO offense, right? It was RPO, RPO, RPO. And again, we make the joke, like, was he the best receiver on the team? Was it him? Was it Becker? Was it Omar Cooper Jr.? He's got an interesting, I guess, profile because he's big, like an outside a clasher kind of receiver, but I don't know if he plays that way. And I definitely don't know if you want him deployed in that type of realm. It's funny. We were in the pre-show. I saw one of the clips and they'll probably show it here in a second about him at his pro day, opted out of that 40-yard dash, Matt Harmon. And we know that 40-yard dash time and fantasy scoring isn't quite synonymous, right? Like, you've got some guys that don't run fast 40s that are really good on the field on Sundays. But I do think that he opted out of this at the combine because he didn't want that electric time, right? He didn't want people questioning that downfield ability, especially when he kind of profiles like that outside guy. You see right here Mendoza overthrowing Surratt on a go ball 60 yards down the field. My model, the signal on him is it's okay, right? It's okay. His projected draft capital, you're talking about maybe a later round two, early round three guy. Feels like he's going to be a good NFL player if he gets the opportunity, somebody, a contributor that helps his team. I just, it's tough for me right now to see high level, and you see his pro day 40-yard dash time, high level fantasy producer at the position based on just how he played and how he was deployed at Indiana.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes him a really interesting prospect because he is somebody that I think his collegiate role, which for the most part was an outside X receiver for Indiana, I don't think he can play that in the NFL and be a high-volume player. Yeah, I don't think he can play that and be a high-volume player. Like, maybe he can contribute because what he does really well, you mentioned it, this is going to sound like it doesn't make sense. Because you mentioned he had 9 touchdowns. He was very productive against man coverage. And yet, for me, in my charting, 17th percentile success rate versus man coverage. Well, it's like, how does that square? Well, because he's not a separator whatsoever against press man coverage. But he is an awesome back shoulder receiver. He is a really, really yes. good contested catch receiver. And when you have a quarterback like Fernando Mendoza, who's going to go in the first round of the and go first overall, in this year's NFL draft and has just, we talked about it, awesome ball placement on those back shoulder passes. Yeah, those guys can be in sync. It's a mind meld, the chemistry, the placement, the hands, it all flows well together. Well, guess what? Not every NFL quarterback is going to have that exact trait. And this is where it becomes just a little bit of an issue with these guys, again, like I said, becoming high volume NFL players. Could Elijah Surratt play X and like be a useful player every now and again? Sure, but if we're talking about how can he become a really, really high-end starter, he's one of these guys that while he does not separate against press man coverage, you're looking at the route charts and reception perception right now. He's run a lot of 9 routes, not getting open on a lot of those 9 routes. He does not have the vertical speed to separate there, but where he does win is in the underneath area on outbreaking routes, and particularly against zone coverage. 17th percentile success rate versus man, 81st percentile against zone coverage. And if you're watching this video on YouTube, not to do a little self-promotion here, but I also have a YouTube channel, and I'm going to be coming out with a video here pretty shortly about like the history of these type of players, the guys who struggle to separate against press man coverage as collegiate players, and how well do they translate to the NFL. Long story short, if you're going to become like a high-end hit, you typically have to become that big slot receiver. You know, you think about your Cooper Kupps, you think about your Amon-Ra St. Browns, you think about your Juju Smith-Schuster's, Rashee Rice. Those are some of the examples of guys that didn't separate well as perimeter players outside in college, but became these big slot receivers in the NFL. I do think Surratt, with his feel for zone, his good hands, and just being an overall really smart player, I do think he could be a candidate to make that transition. But Ray, saying that pre-draft, is obviously just a guessing game, and it is a risk in his profile.
I think there's something that you said a couple of minutes ago about what you do with reception perception and some of the things that happen on the field that coincide with this chart, as well as the stats that we saw on the other page. Since 2022, yards, he's at the top. Touchdowns are incredibly high. I never once said that he was good at separating, right? I just gave you what he did versus those coverages, right? And he is a big body wide receiver. And you've got Fernando Mendoza who can. And before that, it was O'Rourke, right? It was O'Rourke that was there in Indiana. So you've got these quarterbacks that can place the ball in spots to where the receiver catches it. The receiver scores touchdowns. But that doesn't mean that he was separated, right? The last graphic that we had pulled up, number one in contested catches, the yards all there. So he's not finding ways to get open, but he's converting on the op. Here it is right here. First in touchdowns since 2022, first in yards, first in contested catches. This, it makes sense as to why this past season, the touchdowns against man, good. I mean, he's strapped up, but he's big enough to score, right? He's big enough to make the grab, to make the catch. In my write-up on him, it reads just like this. He has no burst off the line of scrimmage and will absolutely get jammed up at the line of scrimmage at the next level. He's got a kick inside, and it's very weird for a player that has been an outside X. Like, I think his best strength would be if he can develop some of that two-way go stuff from the interior. That's a lot of hope. That's a lot of me wish casting. That's a lot of, hey, I want this to happen. But if you're talking about a late second, third round pick, like how much time is he going to have to actually develop that? How much patience is an NFL team going to allow him to figure it out in that role? And that's where he's a very good player, but a very just weird archetype, especially when you're projecting him to the next level.
Right. And I think the what this all shows, like the production and everything here, is like clearly he's a good football player. It's just, again, finding the optimal deployment on where he, like, I mean, this guy was productive, you know, he's at multiple schools. Like, he's consistently moved up the ladder, right? Like, he's consistently transferred up. He's moved up. He's very, very, very productive at every place that he's been. So he clearly can play football. And I just hope that the next coaching staff that he goes to sees that and tries to find the right role for him. And my last point on this is, like, I've talked about this. If you listen to this show over the years, I've talked about this with guys like Keon Coleman or like Jaden Higgins that I think would technically profile better as like bigger slot receivers as opposed to outside X receivers. The good news is, I think for Surratt, is that he's not as big as like Coleman. He's not as big as like Jaden Higgins. You know, 6'2", 210, like that is a little bit closer to like the Cooper Kupps of the world, that maybe somebody sees him in that variety as opposed to that like jumbo slot receiver. So I Surratt's game really grew on me just because he's so smart and there's so much there, I think, to pull on. So I'm hoping that he goes to the right system. That, I mean, he just looks like a lot of these modern NFL receivers that are working over the middle of the field and just thumping zone coverage on Sundays. So he's one of the guys I will be most interested to see where he lands, both from a draft capital standpoint and also, again, like what's the team that he's on and what type of offensive system do they really specialize in. So I have him as like a firm day two guy that I would be comfortable taking in the, you know, yeah, like you said, late second, third round type range, and really be more bullish based on the exact team that takes him. But let's go to a different player who is another outside X receiver in college, and probably will play that in the league, and is a very different player. Chris Bell out of Louisville, 6'2", over 220 pounds, like very, very fascinating player to talk about. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on Chris Bell. So let's let it rip here.
Oh, Chris Bell, Chris Bell, Chris Bell. Have you charted him yet, Harmon? Have you charted Bell yet?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He is like the guy that 4 years ago, I would have been all over. Like, I am all in Chris Bell. And maybe.
Were you a Traylon Burks guy? Were you a Traylon Burks guy?
Well, come on, man. Burks. I've learned my lesson, though. And what's interesting, though, and I know you saw this during charting, is he does play outside, right? So it's not like he was confined to the slot. And then I've picked up some Harmon sayings, right? Mickey Mouse stuff from the slot. But he was doing it from the outside, which is and not manufactured. There was a lot of crossing routes, a lot of routes that allowed him to kind of build up speed. I just did a show with Rich Rebar and we were talking about it. And he's like a locomotive. Like, they'll get him moving across. And by the time he's going full speed, he's bigger and faster than everybody. So you give him that ball on that dig route, that crosser, and then he uses his natural athleticism to kick it up the field. But he's a big guy. I think there's a little too much AJ Brown comparison here. I think we probably should reel that one back in. Of course, obviously the ACL tear and just where his timeline is at the NFL, I think is of all the stuff on the field that we can discuss that we like or dislike about Bell. I think the reality is his timeline is just delayed, right? From an individual player standpoint, not the full complement of routes. Louisville was just like, we got to get this guy the ball. He's the best player on the team. It's not Lacy. It's Chris Bell. And then the ACL, where it was late 2025, he's going to miss all of the early stuff. He's probably not getting drafted as high as maybe he would. Like, he's just behind the eight ball, which maybe that helps him out in the long run. If he's a third round pick and he lands in a good spot where the expectation isn't for him to do anything early, then you catch like a good player later on. But this is the way that he plays and just watching the film, I'm like, oh, this was a guy 4 years ago, I'd be all over him. Big, fast, athletic, just get the ball in his hands. But I've learned, Matt, you can't out-yak the NFL. Like, you just can't. As fast as you are, somebody's faster. As big as you are, somebody is bigger. And I just have some concerns about his breakout age, concern about some of the pedestrian metrics. It just feels a little incomplete with Chris Bell. And I really do like the player. I really do.
Yeah, I think that we share some of the same notes here. It's funny, like, I think early on in the process, and, you know, James Coe always makes fun of me for this over at Reception Perception that, you're just a centrist on every issue. And I'm like, well, listen, sometimes when you ask me if he is AJ Brown or is he Xavier Leggett / Traylon Burks / Jonathan Mingo, I'm like, you realize there's a cavernous middle there. Okay. Like, there's a giant middle in between. Is he a guy who's a top five receiver in the NFL or is he Traylon Burks who flames out? Jonathan Mingo traded on his rookie contract, doesn't do anything with the Cowboys. Like, I mean, come on, there's a huge gap there. So I think Chris Bell as a prospect does fall somewhere in the middle of that, like, Leggett, AJ Brown sort of ranking. I mean, for Chris Bell, it's similar to what we talked about with Chris Brazel last week, where it is a very obvious blend of appealing traits and skills on film and pretty obvious red flags. And you mentioned the ACL that, like, has to hang over all of this discussion here, Ray, because I think there are parts of Chris Bell's game where he does show the ability to run real deal routes and does show the ability to get off press coverage, unlike guys like Leggett or Burks and Mingo and whatever. Like, I think this is a guy who you could theoretically start him out as kind of a sacrificial X receiver, a la Alec Pierce. You know, like, you're just kind of running three routes. It's a very limited menu. And then by year four, maybe you're ready to rock. But the problem is Chris Bell ain't going to be ready in year one. You know, he's not going to be ready. When is he going to be ready to play? Like, he's going to miss the entire offseason. You think he's going to, like, week five? Maybe he is ready. I don't know. But that makes him a risky bet. And you said this about, like, him being a third round pick. hypothetically, what if he goes to a team like the Jets, you know, and he's like the third round pick, second round pick of the Jets. I was like, okay, well, next year he's going to be really good. The entire coaching staff gets cleaned out after this year. And then the next group comes in and they're like, well, we don't just, this is what happened with Mingo. I don't know if Mingo was like completely hopeless in the NFL, probably, but the entire Panther, which had Frank Reich on the staff, ironically enough, you know, Jonathan Mingo, like that whole staff gets cleaned up. Dave Canales, the boys come in and like, we're just going to draft Xavier Leggett, which also was a bad pick, but still, like, they just were just replaced it with kind of a similar archetype guy. So I think that's why ultimately, even though there are some appealing marks in his profile, I think we still have to consider him the biggest boom bust prospect maybe of this entire class, I would say.
Absolutely. And if you're not factoring, and we're not, neither of us have said in this, I don't even want to call it argument against Chris Bell, that he can't be an effective player at the next level. But the immediacy of what he could probably deliver for an NFL team, given the fact of when he was hurt, the timeline of recovery, what he's going to miss, how it's going, like it does impact how you have to go about thinking about selecting this player, right? I mean, there's no testing going on. This is from a few weeks ago. That's great. That's good. But he's miles away from being on the field and contributing. And then what system does he land in? There are always some pie in the sky spots. If I told you, Matt, he lands with the Rams in round three, right? People would be like, ooh. Sure. Right. But
because you know McVay ain't going anywhere.
Right. He ain't going in, but I could say that about 10 different receivers, right? The bigger issue is he's probably not ready early. He's not going to be a top round pick, not a top 50 guy. So just the unfortunate path and the reality that he has to face to become somebody in the NFL that we can trust in the proxy of a game that we play, as much as I like him, the path is just that light at the end of that tunnel is just very, very small right now for Chris Bell. And you know what? If by the end of the season, you and I are on there in week 14, we're like, hey, Harmon, Bell's getting ramped up, man. He's that usage is going up. Look at that Trinity's getting. Then maybe we'll talk about him going into the 2027 season as a year two guy that we're more excited about. But just right where it stands right now, I'm just a little bearish on year one.
I agree. And I think it's important because obviously this is a fantasy show, like to talk about these risks when he becomes like a dynasty rookie draft option, you know, and again, when we know the teams, of course, then that will be like, all right, it makes a little bit more sense here. Like I painted the disaster scenario of the Jets where then it's going to be very risky for a guy like Chris Bell. But I will just say, you mentioned it. We like the player. I do think yes. That there is a lot of appealing aspects about his game and not just like, oh, yeah, he took a drag route to the house, you know, crosser to the house versus Miami. Like he can do that stuff. But I also think you see real ability for him to stack defenders on go routes on the outside, which is like that's how AJ. And again, I don't even really want to say AJ Brown, but just like that's how big boy receivers become big boy receivers, you know, like they become those guys when it's like, yeah, you can do the crossing route stuff. That's cool. But like when you're lined up one-on-one press man coverage on the outside as an X receiver, because I do think Chris Bell likely is probably an X receiver at the next level. Can I throw you one-on-one? Can you get open against press man? And I think there are flashes, not fully formed, but flashes of Chris Bell being able to be that guy.
Agreed. I agree. 100%. And it's tough when you get this body type of receiver because there are only so many guys you can kind of compare them to because there are not a lot of 6 foot, 220 pound receivers in the NFL. I know we don't have numbers on him now, but I do think just watching the tape, I think he's pretty athletic. And no, he's not just a crosser screen. He can run real routes, right? He can do those things. It's so unfortunate that the injury has kind of just put a roadblock up in his prospectus and trajectory of what we think he could become. This is one of those players where I'm not closing the book on Bell, but I just think that year one, fantasy output, that range of outcome is just probably not indicative of the type of player that he could become. And to, you know who's not the same player they were as a rookie? Ja'Marr Chase, right? He's improved. He's not
everybody.
He's
yeah.
not the same player, right? These guys. George Pickens is not the same guy that he was the first 3 years in his career in Pittsburgh. So I'm not closing the book on Bell, but this feels like it's going to be an incomplete profile this year due to that injury.
Real quick, I'm going to toss to break, but before we do, just the two guys I think are the most like volatile players that might go in the first two rounds. I would say Chris Bell, Chris Brazel, ironically, first name. Just, I know this is like unfair to compare the two. Which guy would you rather have? Like, who would you rank higher, Chris Bell or Chris Brazel?
I think objectively, it has to be Brazel. I would rank him higher. I still probably, if you take the knee out of it and you tell me, Ray, he'll be healthy next year, I still have a little more trepidation and concern with Brazel than I do Bell. Like, I do. I think that I've got a little more hesitation about Brazel's wide receiver profile than I do Chris Bell's. I've got way more concern this year about Bell's injury history and what that timeline looks like. But bar for bar, I think Bell healthy is a little better than Chris Brazel.
Yeah. If I was an NFL general manager, like, you know, you're asking me to like, who should I draft? I'm like, if you're a team that you feel, which, you know, famous last words, you feel like we're going to be around for a few years, like you've got some job security here, I would much, much rather make the case for Chris Bell. I would strongly make the case for Bell over Brazel, because I just think the film is better. I think the translatable skills are better. And they're both guys that only lined up on like one side of the field, which I've talked about is a red flag for me. So you kind of like, that's a wash. And I just think, you know, there's injury concerns with Bell. Obviously, there's off-field concerns with Brazel. Maybe that's like a wash there too. I would just say too, by the way, before we toss the break, if you haven't watched Chris Bell, if you can find some All-22 on Chris Bell, do it just for you, so you can see in 2025 how much he hated his quarterback. Like this is the guy that like Ray was making all the like wide receiver one, like, I can't believe you didn't throw me the ball here. I can't believe you, like, just absolutely going crazy about that. And then he would take it out on like defenders in a very George Pickens way, where he would just lay them out on like backside blocks, where it's like, well, you didn't actually help the run play at all. You didn't spring anybody here. You just were pissed and you laid a guy out. So I don't know if that matters in his evaluation at all, but it did make him like a fun guy to watch in that way.
It's called that dog. He's got that dog in him, Matt Harmon. That dog.
Yeah, he might have two or three dogs in him, that's for sure. All right, we're going to take our first quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a completely different couple of players on the other side of this quick break. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. And the theme of this year's wide receiver class is without a question just how many different flavors there are. And nothing exemplifies that more than the next like three guys we're about to talk about here. Jeremy Bernard, Zachariah Branch, Malachi Fields. Because my God, Ray Garvin, these are all very, very different players. But when you look at Jeremy Bernard out of Alabama, first guy we're going to talk about here, what do you see on Bernard?
Jeremy Bernard, first of all, I am floored that he ran a 4.48. I didn't see that coming. He's a big inside player. I think he's got reliable hands. I don't know if he's athletic or he just wasn't asked to do some of those. I don't know what it is about his game. It just doesn't feel like it's going to translate the way it needs to, in my opinion. I also know that Jeremy Bernard, I believe he's one of the wide receivers that had one of the highest uncatchable ball rates in college football from the P5, which that ought to tell you something about Mr. Ty Simpson. So I'm not putting it all on Bernard, but it feels like the way that he was deployed at Alabama was out of necessity. So I'm trying to have an open mind. Can he do more at the next level? I don't know, Matt. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of him. It took him a while to break out. He's an older age breakout prospect, which is a little concerning. Good at avoiding tackles. He's physical. He's a big guy. I mean, 6'1", 206. I know that the measurables aren't like Elijah, but you watch him on the field. He's got good size to him. He's built well. There's some plays in the college football playoff, the head top grab. Down the field on the vertical route, outstanding. I know a lot of people show that clip. But play for play, this feels like the type of guy that just spells complimentary, kind of role player. I don't know if any NFL offensive coordinator is building around Jeremy Bernard. It's more so if he can come in and do some of these things, then great. But it just, he doesn't seem like the type of guy that any team is going to build around. He, the epitome of just like a mid player, I guess. And I'm not trying to be dismissive of him, but he just, he feels kind of, he just feels like Jeremy Bernard. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, and I don't say this to be disrespectful to you. I actually mean this as like a you're doing what we should be doing on the show. That was like a very fantasy brain analysis. Like, I don't think he will ever become a guy that is this monster fantasy producer. But I bet, Ray, if we were doing this show from like an NFL angle, or we had just like a straight, you know, NFL analyst on, they'd be like, you know, this guy's going to be like a reliable glue guy. That's what I keep calling him, like a reliable glue guy, kind of complete the wide receiver room, you know. But to right from a fantasy standpoint, that becomes like a wide receiver five in fantasy, but like maybe that's a third receiver for an NFL team, you know. And that's kind of how I view Jeremy Bernard, is like he's just solid at everything, you know, which can be a little bit, again, do you say he's useful, or like he's useful, like he's a really useful player? It depends on the inflection of the word there, because I think he lines up everywhere, right? I tweeted this out, we're showing on the screen right now. He lines up outside left, he lines up outside right, he lines up in the slot at an almost completely even rate. You even see him take reps in the backfield as both a true rusher and as a design touches guy, which I don't think he will do at the NFL level. He got a ton of like designer touches at Alabama. I doubt that happens at the NFL level, because you mentioned like he'll break some tackles and stuff like that, but he doesn't like have the juice, I think, to be like a true design touches guy at the next level. But I will say this, the one thing that fires me up about Bernard, and this is just this, I like this in a receiver, the guy just runs dig routes so well, just throttles down and breaks over the middle of the field. And when him and Ty Simpson were cooking at the start of the year, they were just making money on those throws, because we talk about Ty Simpson, he could rip it over the middle of the field. But when Ty Simpson was, you know, maybe not so accurate in the back half of the field, he's just sailing it over his head. So I think it really just depends on expectations, Ray. Like, do we think this guy's going to become a fantasy superstar? You know, I mean, I think we got to see some of these like jack of all trades become like a true master in a few of them. But I could see him just sticking around an NFL roster and being like a useful player for a team.
Yeah, I could see that too. Jalen Tolbert was useful for Dallas and he stuck around for a little while and you never wanted him in fantasy. Yeah. I mean, my model as far as usage, and you look at the back test of where he's projected to go, it's very poor. Like the outcome for him to be somebody that's a 1,000-yard receiver by year three, a 15-point-per-game wide receiver by year three, it doesn't exist. And a lot would have to break right for him to be kind of that. I'm trying to think of like best case scenario, could he just be force-fed? And I think it's disingenuous to players like a Jarvis Landry, but if he were plopped into an offense that didn't have anybody, could he just be force-fed a bunch of targets and be successful? Maybe, but I'll tell you this, he doesn't have the type of profile that would stop me from drafting somebody else in the following year or trying to upgrade that position in the offseason. I think glue guy is a good way to put it. I'd probably peg him as a team's wide receiver 4 or 5 in his rookie season.
Mm, yeah. Could he go to a team like Miami and have, you know, one of those seasons where he just gets a bunch of targets because there's nobody else in the room? And he actually, I do think he kind of fits the system of what they might be running there. A lot of these intermediate level routes. And again, like, okay, he can out-target the aforementioned Jalen Tolbert, who you just mentioned there is on that Dolphins roster. Sure. But is there a lot of upside long-term? I think he does have to improve. I will just say this for folks who are sick enough to listen to, like this show and Football 301, I'm going to talk much more positive about, you know, Jeremy Bernard on Football 301 as like, hey, this guy's a nice, useful player, glue guy. But I do agree with you, Ray, that like, yeah, 15 points per game in fantasy, a lot has to break right for him to be one of those type of players. And the next guy we're going to talk about too, I'm not sure I see that ceiling in his range of outcomes either, but I am curious what you think about Zachariah Branch, who, man, I'm just going to say, I'll throw it to you this way, Ray. This is probably, if not certainly, one of the weirdest reception perception profiles I've ever put together.
5'9", 177, so we'll go 5'9", 180, 4'3", 5, 38-inch vertical, strong. This was a guy. Yeah, I'm a big college guy. Love college football. His first collegiate game at USC, I remember playing in a couple of Devy leagues, and he was balling out first game. And people were like, would you trade such and such for Zachariah Branch? And I'm like, hell no. This is a future first rounder. Look at how good he is. And then the career just kind of plays out, and you're like, okay. I mean, he's athletic as all outdoors. He's put together well. He's a football kid. He's from my hometown, rival school in Las Vegas, Bishop Gorman High School. Dynamic slot receiver. He's good at a lot of the things that the me of 5 years, this would have been my wide receiver one 5 years ago. Athletic, speed, you just get the ball in his hands and he'll be able to make defenders miss. You cannot yak the NFL. Like I've learned my lesson with these kind of receivers. You cannot out yak the NFL. What I have in my write-up with him, which is interesting, I put, he's the type of player that you can build plays around him. I didn't say build an offense around him. You can build plays around him. I absolutely think there are some specific plays in roles in which he will be utilized at the next level. But man, it is just, I think people take for granted how difficult it is to be a limited receiver, 5'9", sub 180 pounds, and be a true receiver. The Zay Flowerses of the world, the Tyreek Hills, the Steve Smiths. We like to throw out these smaller guys that they can be these guys in the NFL, but that's such an outlier type range of outcome for a player who in college, and I want to see the chart, Matt, at least my naked eye, watching Georgia, there wasn't a lot of stuff schemed up for him down the field. A lot of production happened at or near around the line of scrimmage. And again, I like the fact that he can get around Kentucky and he can run around Florida defensive backs, but that ain't Patrick Surtain. That's not Cooper DeJean. That's not the high-level player. So it just, where does he go? How is he deployed? This also feels like a more useful team fit player. I don't want to go Kevontae Turpin-esque, but you saw how good it worked out for Pittsburgh deploying Calvin Austin in a primary receiver role, and it didn't work out well at all. This is one of the guys, and Rich and I just talked about this, Matt. If you beat me with Zachariah Branch in rookie drafts, then so be it, right? If you draft him and I fade because I'm scared of this profile, kudos to you, hats off. And you can give me all the, just because he wasn't asked to do it in college doesn't mean he can't do it. Maybe. But I highly doubt an NFL team is going to come in and say, now we're going to expand your route tree to do shit that you've never done before.
Yeah, that's a tough part too. And like for some of these guys, I would say that, like, oh, just because he wasn't asked to do it doesn't mean he can't do it. Because like I think you see evidence on the field of like when he's looked at it. And I always come back to the Tyreek Hill example from Reception Perception, like in 2016. When he was a rookie, he was getting a lot of that designer-y touches stuff, the Mickey Mouse routes and all the Andy Reid typical stuff. But when you actually isolated and watched him run real routes, I'm like, this guy actually shows the ability to do that. If his role is expanded, I think he will respond well to it. With Zachariah Branch, I don't think you get a lot of that. That's the thing here. And we can go ahead and get this just out of the way right now. Zachariah Branch ran a screen route on 29% of the routes I charted for his Reception Perception sample. That is the highest mark I've ever charted for a prospect. Here are the guys that are closest in the historical database. This is, mix of classes. Rondale Moore, 20, rest in peace, of course. Rondale Moore, 20.9%. Amari Rodgers, 18.9%. Ardarius Stewart, 16%. No one else in the classes I've charted, so that's 2016 to 2018, I have a two-year gap, 2021 to 2026, has even hit 15%. So we're talking about, like, nobody's been over 15%. This guy is at almost 30%. That just makes the rest of his profile very, very weird. Very, very weird. And I don't think when you look at all those other routes, he shows, like, a lot of, especially a good feel for zone coverage, which is going to be tough to be a slot receiver. There are times where man-to-man, one-on-one, he'll run a route over the middle of the field. And despite being 177 pounds, I think he's pretty fearless running like in-breaking routes over the middle of the field. But that's still a pretty small menu of a player. I see him, Ray, as kind of like a like what Jimmy Horn Jr. did for the Panthers this year. And he was a guy that is similarly built. I think he's sub 180 pounds, smaller guy. And a lot of what he did was like, okay, yeah, he got a designer touch every now and again, but mostly he was used at full speed motion to like create leverage for Tetero and McMillan to be the primary read run routes over the middle of the field. I think there's a role available for Zachariah Branch to do that in the NFL. I don't think anybody was starting Jimmy Horn Jr. in their fantasy football lineups at any point.
And that's why I'm so confused as to why his sort of projected draft capital is still kind of late round two. I'm curious to see where he goes. I'm curious to see the situation he lands in. And maybe Matt, his best path to success is to be kind of deployed. And if you remember Tyreek Hill, that rookie year, he was making his hay on like returns, right? Like he was so explosive in the return game.
And he'll be an awesome returner.
And maybe in the right spot, he gets that confidence up doing that return kind of stuff, and they start to try him out on some different things. He's not a bad football player, but you do have to ask yourself the question. At USC, he didn't really do any of this stuff. He was never asked to do it. At Georgia, he never was asked to do it. That was the role that college put him in. And how confident are we that, and I'm looking at this, at the profile, it's not great, right? It's the things that I'm tracking that you need to be able to do, that slant route percentage, pretty low. You need to be doing that at the next level. The go route, you're not going to have him doing those things. The comeback, the curl route is just easy targets, right? Curl, hitch. He wasn't asked to do these things. So I'm just a little hesitant, and especially, Matt, you gave the doomsday spot for, I forgot the receiver we were just talking about, landing in the jet. If he gets put in a spot where he's asked to do things that he's not good at, it could just be a disaster for Branch.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated to see what his draft capital ends up being. Does he just become another Chiefs receiver? Why not? You know, just another small fast guy. Yeah, I know. It'll be what happens. But yeah, very fascinating to see, because I think he'll probably end up being a higher guy on like media draft boards than NFL boards, but I could be wrong about that. And there's a role for him there, but how big the role can be, I think that is a pretty big question. Speaking of big, the next guy we're going to talk about, Malachi Fields. Big receiver, okay? 6'4", over 210 pounds. So funny, like, you looked at, by the way, I just want to give one little credit to Zachariah Branch. The guy is jacked for his size. He's really well built, put up a ton of reps on the bench press. So he is a very strong player that can break tackles. So not like useless in the designer touch game. But my point in saying that is, he's what, 5'9", 177 pounds? Malachi Fields, 6'4", 218. Oh, yeah, sure. They're both just wide receivers. Very, very different players. I'm very curious to see what you think about Malachi Fields, because I found him to be a very polarizing player with very widespread opinions on him.
I think he's really good at the catch point. I think you could see some of that. Contested catch grabs, body control. He's made some. Everybody got really excited during the Senior Bowl, some of the big downfield plays that he made, just crazy highlight reel grabs. You see the one-handed catch that gets circulated a lot with Fields. But, man, you talk about the agility of a battleship. I mean, this dude, he ain't finna win with quickness, right? That's not his game. You see 36 receptions, 630 yards, 17 and a half a catch, like, this stuff works in college, man. And where I would disagree a little bit with Zuerlein is, although Pittman is big as well, 6'4", 210 plus pounds, you look at the route inventory and the deployment of him coming out of USC and the way that the Colts use him, he can win quick. He can run the slant routes. He can run some of the, even though he's big, he can win quick. It's not Malachi Fields, in my opinion. There's absolutely a role for him at the next level. The 40-yard dash time, it doesn't look great on paper, but it also, I don't see somebody that's blazing fast on tape, so I don't want to double knock him, right? It just kind of confirms that, yeah, he's probably not winning in that type of role. Again, I think the situation is going to be very paramount for him, very, very important, just fantasy-wise, fantasy football-wise, this ain't the big arc type receiver that I would want to take a chance on. I think there are some other receivers that are bigger or in that big wide receiver mold, the outside receiver that I'd rather have opposed to Malachi Fields.
Yeah. Let me just say this before I kind of talk about the risks of him as a player. There's some stuff about him that I really, really like and appreciate. I think he is awesome at the catch point. He's a good blocker. He has a really nice feel for zone coverage, especially coming back to the quarterback, which I think is nice. There is not a lot of separation downfield, though. And he is, just like Elijah Surratt, a guy that is not great against press man coverage, but good against zone coverage. So is he a big slot receiver? He's, again, kind of, I mean, it's funny, actually, his RP metrics and the fact that he was slow at the, on the 40 yard dash, but fast in terms of miles per hour. He topped out over 19 miles per hour in the gauntlet drill. That is exactly like Keon Coleman's profile. It's just, I think Fields is going to go later than Coleman. So I think he's actually, and I'll actually have them ranked in the same tier from, in terms of my stacked rankings on reception perception, like, they're going to be ranked in the same range. It's just like, I don't think Fields is going to go top of the second round. I think Fields will go somewhere else, maybe on later day two, which I think makes him a little bit more palatable there. But again, we said this with Coleman, like, he's a guy that metrics wise might have been better as a big slot receiver, but he's like too big to be the big slot receiver. And I think Fields, 6'4 over 210, he might be in that way. But like, could he be a Jaden Higgins type player where he's better off ball? You know, maybe, but there are other red flags in the profile too. Like JJ Zacharyson in his prospect guide wrote about Fields, who, by the way, will be 24 years old as a rookie. So he's an older prospect too. And sometimes these older guys, they look better on film than they really are, is the like long and short of it. But quoting JJ, older breakout and the absence of a truly elite season leave little analytical margin for error. And that's kind of the way I think. It's like there's a path for Fields, but I think it's pretty narrow. And the last thing I'll say, again, to just kind of tease that the whole video that I'm going to do about like these guys that don't separate in college, I mentioned like one of the ways it works out is like you're a big slot. Other guys are like Kayshon Booty, like kind of volatile deep threat types. And then the other, like, but the vast majority of players, even if they're drafted on day one or day two, the vast majority of them get cut on their rookie contract. So pretty wide range of outcomes there.
Yeah, if you're going to be big like that, you've got, there's just no superpower. There's just no superpower. You see right here. Yeah, I don't know when I tweeted this out, but based on his stuff and the score at receiver, like this guy's just, for rookie drafts, hard pass for me. Hard pass for me.
Yeah. I there's, again, there's stuff I really like about his game. And I think he actually could maybe work out as like a sacrificial X receiver. But again, from a fantasy standpoint, that's probably not what we're really looking for. Because again, you're not getting a lot of volume in a role like that. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're talking two smaller potential slot options in the NFL. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and I actually am so glad that we have these next two guys grouped together, Antonio Williams and Deion Burks, because let me just say this right off the top, Ray. One of these guys, and I said this in my Discord, is 100% going to be the Matt Harmon fell for it again guy, in that like these are some small, explosive, maybe slot-based players who separate. One of them separates better than the other. We'll get into it, but I'm curious to hear what you think about these guys, because this is the archetype of player I'm absolutely trying to wean myself off of. You talked about, Chris Bell, 3 years ago, you would have been all over this guy. 3 years ago, I would have been like, oh man, how can I hype up this player even more? And I'm actually trying to not be that. So let's talk about Antonio Williams out of Clemson. What do you see with this guy?
Just so crazy how the season goes. This was a lot of people's wide receiver one coming into the college football season. The 2026... I know, wide receiver one, Antonio Williams, because of what he had done the year before. Everyone knew he was a great athlete. Size better than a lot of people expected. I think some people thought he was like a 5'8", 5'9 guy, but 5'11", 187. I mean, he's right there, Mekhi Lemon type size, right? 4'4", 40-yard dash, quick 10-yard split, vertical jump. All that stuff is there. Clemson was just a it was just a mess this year. It was a disaster across the board. So slot guy, precision guy, injury stuff kind of play. I mean, first game of the season, he was damn hurt. So just it started off bad for Antonio Williams. But my model, he's right on that borderline of like meaningful signal that there is something there with Antonio Williams. Whereas the player that my mind thought I liked more, Deion Burks, his signal is very, very low. He's also an elite type athlete. Sticking with Williams, this is one where I'm paying close attention, Matt, because he's one of those. Let me be very careful how I say this. Let me be very, very, because I don't need to get clipped. I don't need people saying I'm saying he's this. But there are times in the draft where players get drafted later where you're like, this is a way too good of a player to be going in the range that he's going. Whether it's round three or early day three, this is going to be one of those guys where you look up and be like, if he lands in a dope spot, I would not be shocked if he works his way on the field. And I don't even want to give you Rams pie in the sky. Like if the Commanders took him on day two, I would be like, okay, like there's some opportunity here with JD5. Like I like Antonio Williams a lot more than I like some of these other guys in this range.
Yeah, I like Antonio Williams a lot. Yeah, this is the thing. He separates. He's a good, solid zone beater. He also wins against man coverage. And he is, though, to me, like probably a pure slot option. Maybe he can take more reps outside than I'm imagining because he does beat man coverage. But again, in the game sample for RP, 82% slot rate, 4.3% snaps in the backfield. So not a lot of reps outside. Whereas I've seen some folks, apparently, I didn't know this, but like folks in my Discord alerted me that like he gets some like Ladd McConkey comparisons. Ladd McConkey played outside receiver at Georgia. That was why I was like, this is just because he's a small white doesn't mean needs to be a slot receiver. Like that dude rips it on the outside. Like there's go watch him at Georgia. He's an outside receiver. So like I think that Antonio Williams, probably not in that regard. I compare him and I love to find a player every year that I get to do this with. I think he's like a Sterling Shepard type. I love Sterling Shepard, adore Sterling Shepard. I think there was a much higher range of outcomes for him had he not had all those injuries. But even still, he probably projected best as like a good, solid slot receiver who could win against man coverage and isolation at times. So I don't know that the athleticism that he showed at the combine always shows up on the film, but I do see a really good route runner that tempos things well and settles into zone coverages. So, Ray, I think if he gets drafted by a team that uses a lot of spread concepts and is heavy on three receiver sets and stuff like that, there's a path for him. But at the same time, we're seeing the team use less of this slot receiver archetype. So that does matter from a fantasy standpoint.
Totally agree. I don't know who Ladd is. I mean, I know who Ladarius McConkey is, but I don't know. I got to look up that Ladd fellow you were talking about. Yeah. So but I'm with you with Antonio Williams. And I don't think you're wrong. He's a slot guy. And that's okay to say that. Like let him cook inside. I think if a team drafts him to do that, right, go be the slot. I think there is some fantasy sleeper potential with Williams.
Yeah, Antonio Williams is probably more Andrew McConkey than Ladarius McConkey. We'll just leave it at that. Okay, Deion Burks, you mentioned him. He's the other guy we're going to talk about here really quick. I want to like Deion Burks, and there are some interesting things in his RP profile, but man, there's a lot of red flags, and I'm curious, like not necessarily, like his profile overall is very mixed in RP. There's some good signal, there's some bad signal. There's a lot of bad signal from like a production standpoint with Burks. Again, I'll quote JJ on this. He has like the lowest yards per route run, I believe, in the class, or one of the lowest. So not ideal when you're looking at. Yeah, again, here's JJ's quote. Quote, Burks posted a 1.35 yards per route run rate over his career. That's third worst in the class. Since 2020, the Zap model has tracked 24 wide receivers entering the league with career yards per route run below 1.5. The best case scenario, JJ notes, is like Josh Palmer. Very different player than Deion Burks, but that's like the career path we're talking about here.
My model, I'm curious to see what that reception perception profile chart looks like. Fifth percentile route grade. Not good. Okay. According to my stuff, 15 career drops. Athleticism is absolutely there. And then you'll see some times where you get him the ball and it's just dynamic playmaking ability.
Uh-huh.
This one is probably going to be a hard no for me. Probably a hard no.
This is a guy for me 4 years ago, I'd have been like, hell yeah, let's go. Deion Burks, like, because I do think he gets, I think he gets open. I think he separates well. Particularly, like, he fights, he is super tough. I want to give him a lot of, like, his, he's clearly in the gym taking care of his body. This guy was rocked up at the combine. This guy is rocked up on film. He ripped a bunch of reps on the bench press. And, like, the couple things he does well is he does get into his short routes well. And he also aggressively fights back to the football in zone coverage. Like, when there's a window, he presents, like, he does present a target to the quarterback. Quarterback was a little up and down at Oklahoma last year. You know, just overall kind of mixed there. But when you line him up on the outside, Ray, at 5'9", you know, 180 pounds or whatever he is, he just gets swallowed up by good corners. Like, the LSU film on him was atrocious, honestly. So it's pretty up and down, I would say. Like, there's probably a role for him in the NFL, but in a league where we just said is moving away from that slot-based archetype, I do think Burks is, from a fantasy standpoint, like, I would want him on my NFL team. From a fantasy standpoint, I'm not 100% sure what the ceiling is here.
Totally agree.
But I want to like Burks, okay? Like, I do want that on the record here, that I want to like him, and there are appealing notes in his profile, but there's also just a lot of volatility and risk here, and I think you'd be crazy not to at least consider the production profile on him. So maybe more of like a late day two, early day three type of player. All right, we are going to toss to our final break of the show, which means that's going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, we're going to keep going live here on YouTube. So if you're with us there, we'll be back in just a minute with more breakdowns on some players on the top 100 of the consensus big board right after this. All right, we're back, and we're breaking down some guys that are definitely kind of in the low end of the top 100 here before we do our diamond in the rough candidates. We got Skylar Bell, we got Ted Hurts, we got Bryce Lance. We are in the low level of competition sort of danger zone with these guys, and this is always important when we're looking at, like, charting data, stuff that I do. This is something that I've been burned by the Sky Moores of the past, okay? So I'm always wary of these guys, but Skylar Bell, 6 foot, 192, out of UConn. Crazy production. 101 catches, almost 1,300 yards, 13 touchdowns this past year. Ray, this, I don't know. I have really struggled to figure out exactly what Skylar Bell is, so I'm fascinated to hear what you think about him.
I mean, some of the numbers look good. I mean, over 3 yards per route run, that looks good. The production, that looks great. The size and the athleticism looks phenomenal, right? It's a rough week for UConn, right? They lost the national championship to Michigan, and then you've got this receiver here that we've got to talk through. I was curious to see him at the Senior Bowl, and I watched every rep at the Senior Bowl, just how he did, and I get it. These all-star games, it's just, I just want to see how they move against some higher competition. And it was a struggle for him, even in Mobile. And the conference discount, while in the past I'm like, oh, if you can win here, you can win everywhere. It doesn't matter. It does matter, right? This is a much lower level of competition for him. Somebody had put out earlier this week that he was reminiscent of Jamar Chase. I saw that he was like Jamar Chase light, and I'm like, that couldn't be further from what I think this player is at the next level. Again, a lot of screens, that stuff, Matt. I love the fact that they find ways to win in college. But you know what doesn't happen in college? There's no maturation. There's no development for the next level. It's, oh, you can do this and we can win games at UConn, then we'll keep doing the same thing. I'm not here to try to get you prepared for the NFL, Skylar Bell. I'm here to help you win games for the UConn Huskies. And I just don't know how this skill set is going to translate at the next level. And he's a great athlete. Like, these numbers, you look at it, great athlete, but that doesn't necessarily make a great receiver. Again, very low on the board for me.
Yeah, I saw Billy Marshall, good follow on Twitter. He actually compared his, like, profile more so, and some of, like, the way he was used in college and stuff like that, to Ricky Pearsall, another guy who was a high caliber athlete, but was like a 24-year-old rookie. And which Scotty Rebell will be turned 24 in July. So he's another one of these guys, lower level competition, older prospect. You kind of have to wonder a little bit about that, because I thought Ricky Pearsall's film was like way better than Skylar Bell. I think what Skylar Bell does really well is, for a guy who's 6 foot, 192 pounds, he does attack the football well. He does clap at the football. Like, I talked about this with Matt Waldman earlier this week, and he's much more optimistic about Skylar Bell than I am. But like, he's a guy that like, Skylar Bell kind of claps at the football at the catch point, but it does work for him. So maybe it can work for him at the next level. I don't know, but that's something to be questionable. But like, his overall contested catch work was really strong. Again, at UConn though, remember this is what we're talking about here. Like, at UConn, he was a good contested catch receiver, tracked the ball well, extended well for things. That's great. I don't think he separates all that well. Feel for zone, mixed, runs himself into coverages, and definitely does not have the frame. You mentioned it. You saw it at the Senior Bowl. I think it shows up on film too, from like a press coverage standpoint. So kind of an average separator, goes down on first contact a lot for me, for a guy that gets like all these design touches. So yeah, maybe I'm wrong. I don't see a day two receiver for Skylar Bell. I see a pretty... Yeah, I think a guy that I would take him, I think he's like more of a fourth rounder to me.
That's where I have him. He doesn't even print on my day one, day two receiver model. It doesn't even print. So I've got him as a day three guy as well.
Yeah, maybe could be like a nice glue guy in that sort of, if we're talking about the glue guys of the draft, like Jeremy Bernard, Antonio Williams, I think are those guys. I think Skylar Bell's like not in that tier necessarily to me. So interesting player, does do some things really well. The athleticism is there. I'm just not sure that the athleticism really showed up all the time. Ted Hurst, another guy, Georgia State. Can't believe how much tape I've watched of Georgia State and North Dakota State, the next two players we're going to talk about here. My God. Georgia State out of Ted Hurst here. Another big time athlete, you know, size 6'4", 206, 4.42 speed. When you watch Ted Hurst play, though, Ray, and some of the data points, what do you see from him?
I see a player that was just better than everybody else that he was playing against at Georgia State. It's just very obvious, right? It's just very obvious. He was just much better than the level of competition that they faced. He actually prints in my model very low. Likelihood of we're getting a 15-point-per-game guy by year three, low. But I do see a good athlete on tape. I see a better athlete than Skylar Bell was. Again, how much of that is because he's playing at Georgia State and the level of competition? Size, testing is good. Where does he land? And realistically, like if he doesn't come in, Matt, and earn... Here's one for you, Matt. We put Ted Hurst in Las Vegas last year, right, as the X receiver instead of Deontay Thornton. Is he a better receiver than Thornton is, who he got forced onto the field, right? And I know you're laughing because I always got to bring it back to stuff we talked about, right? But he got forced into that role. I think Hurst can do more than Thornton can inside of the same role that Thornton was placed in and he shouldn't have been in. It's just hard because there is a big time talent gap from Georgia State to the National Football League. But if he somehow lands in an offense that is devoid of that position and he just gets on the field, Matt, can he be a productive player?
I think it'll probably take a year, you know, of development. Again, coming from Georgia State, it probably is going to take a year. You know, again, the level of competition jump is real. And I think he did have a game against Ole Miss this past year. And obviously, throw out the production, okay? Like, Georgia State going against Ole Miss, they're going to get obliterated. It doesn't, but I think he showed pretty well in that game. Like, he was okay in that game. When he played against Vanderbilt, there were some up and down moments. Again, when you got to go watch those games, you got to really weigh those games when you're talking about Ted Hurst, because they matter. That's the only times you're seeing him against that high level of competition there. The only thing I laugh about the Dante Thornton thing is like, that's always just going to be such a trigger for me, because that made like no sense. Like, I cannot believe that the Raiders are like, let's take the developmental receiver that we took in the fourth round from Tennessee and like, he's going to be our day one X receiver because he's 6 foot and over 200 pounds. And that kind of actually brings me to my point about Ted Hurst. And we've got the Lance Zierlein comparison on here of Torrey Horton. I can't believe that's his comp, because that's my comp for Ted Hurst. which like I thought I was being unique there, but I said this about Ted Hurst, like, and it's on Twitter months ago. Like, my first two games, like, kind of reminds me of Torrey Horton from last year's class. And I liked Torrey Horton a lot, but I think, obviously, Ted Hurst a little bit more developmental because it's, well, I mean, Torrey Horton came from Colorado State, one side of the field player. I thought he might take a minute, but he was pretty good in the NFL right away because he was more of like a big receiver that was a slasher. And that's my thing about Ted Hurst. I think when you see him go and run these, like, vertical routes as a big receiver, I think he can kind of, even against bad teams, can get kind of swallowed up. I don't think he's there as a route runner, but when you just get him rolling in the open field, he breaks a lot of tackles, like dig routes, post routes, slant routes. There's definitely something from, like, there's a ball of clay here that I don't know where I'd take him in the NFL draft. Not in the second round for sure, but like, there's a moldable ball of clay here but I just don't want to see him become like a big X receiver, even with the frame and the athleticism, because I don't know that he has that necessarily to him.
Well, then if that assessment is right, then this is the type of player that developmentally to do those things, it's just probably an uphill battle for him. Like this is a guy that what you want to see is him see some type of role early and then him grow into that. But if you're talking about a late day two guy or maybe a day three guy, and then they're a year away from maybe being a year away, the battle is just really difficult for him. Very, very difficult.
Right. And I think that's where that Torrey Horton thing kind of comes. And I thought my biggest problem with Ted Hurst is that I think he makes a lot of mistakes at the catch point. And like, that's a thing where if you're good enough, we can live with, like, all right, you're going to drop passes. You know, if you're Casey Concepcion, we take you in the first round, you drop passes, we're going to be okay. We're going to live through that. But if you're Ted Hurst, like, you're fighting to get on the field, that'll be a little difficult. Cause like, Torrey Horton shouldn't have gone in the fifth round. He was more of like a round two talent to me, but he had injury concerns and guess what? He got hurt. But like, he got on the field early because he was able to stand out in that way for a team that had a light receiver depth chart. So if Ted Hurst goes to a team that has a light receiver depth chart, maybe he can flash early, but like, guess what? Now Torrey Horton might be behind Rashid Shaheed for the next few years because they just re-signed him. And like, that's the risk for these guys too in your rookie drafts. Like, yeah, take a flyer on him, but don't get too crazy in terms. Like, even Torrey Horton was a guy I loved, but like, he was more of a third round target for me in rookie drafts, fourth round in deeper leagues, stuff like that. So really interesting player is Ted Hurst. I do think he's a good developmental dart throw. I also think the next guy we're going to talk about here, Bryce Lance, another really interesting developmental dart throw, North Dakota State. He's got a weird, he's Trey Lance's brother, by the way, for people who don't know that. So obviously high caliber athlete, 6'3", 204, 4.34 in the 40, vertical jump, 41 and a half, 11 and a 1 inch in the broad. Like, this guy can, he is athletic, and he moves really well. And you see him play against some goofball teams that he just obliterates some of these goofball teams that he's playing against at North Dakota State there. But what do you think about the pro translation of a guy like Bryce Lance?
I mean, he's such an, the athleticism shows up on tape. I mean, I didn't know he was that fast, but I was like, oh yeah, this dude is athletic. But I mean, you're talking about athleticism, right? He's one of the best damn receiver athlete profiles we've seen come through the combine, right? And he tested at the combine. He ran fast. The production at North Dakota State was real. But it's North Dakota State, man. It's in the SU. It's that and I'm not trying to, great FCS program. And if we were talking about him for the UFL draft, he'd be the number one pick. He'd be the number one overall pick in the UFL draft. But we're talking about the NFL draft and what his potential range of outcome is at the next level. That concern is tough. Now, I also try to reconcile with how much do we just kind of use his brother and be like, well, this one's got to be better than the other Lance. Like, this guy, he plays a different position. He's light-skinned. He kind of looks like Christian Watson, and Watson has been good, and he's an athlete. But I don't think he's Christian Watson. I think Christian Watson was much more polished and ready to go NFL-wise. And by ready to go, it didn't mean that Watson didn't have some things that he needed to learn, but he seemed further along in his development than Bryce Lance. I would take a shot, NFL me, right? Not fantasy me, maybe later, but I would take a shot on developing this kind of guy. Like, let's bring him in and see what he can do. And Matt, here's the thing. He ain't running the full route tree year one. I'm going to ask you to do a couple of things, right? And just do those few things and do them well. But he's one where I'm curious to see where he goes.
Same. Christian Watson, if we're making that comparison, obviously people will, because North Dakota State, and he was a freak athlete too. Christian Watson, I think, he was not polished either, but he was much more, he was freakier after the catch than Bryce Lance is. Like, Bryce Lance doesn't break, I compared Christian Watson to like Martavis Bryant, because another guy that was like not the most refined player in the world, but like you could spit the ball out to him and he would do freaky stuff. And they were a little hot and cold at the catch point, just like Christian Watson was a little hot and cold at the catch point times with the Packers. But I would say we saw Christian Watson's best football in what, year four this past year?
Yep.
And that's freaking year four. And obviously he's had a lot of injuries and stuff like that, but still, it took a time for him to be the type of player he eventually, I think, the fully formed version of himself. But at the same time, he was so athletic that he was like a useful player. I think with Lance, he's more of like a project type. But there's a lot of appealing parts to him. His RP profile is very similar to Chris Brazel, which Chris Brazel is being projected as like a day two pick, Bryce Lance day three pick. I would rather pass on Brazel and be like, let me take a shot on developing a Bryce Lance if he's going to go on day three. Because also a lot of high effort player. You could stick him on special teams and be like, hey, develop there and we're going to work on you as a receiver. Cause he flashes, he's got like a weird running style. I don't know if you've noticed that, but like he almost, and it got better as his career went on, but for a while he was like always like kind of leaning as a runner. It's weird to describe unless you actually watch it, but he does show the ability to like get off man coverage and win on the vertical route tree. Obviously, again, level of competition, these are some of the schools I charted him against: Southern Illinois, Mercer, Southeast Missouri State. That sounds like a fake school. South Dakota State. You know, obviously the great Tucker Kraft, I believe, came out of there. Northern Iowa. I mean, he did have one game against Colorado. I was like, I know it's last year. That's got to be in the sample, because at least like Travis Hunter was playing some of those games. So it's just like, you know, he's obviously a developmental player, but I think there's something there with Bryce Lance that makes him an intriguing.
How granny was that tape? How granny was that that tape that you were getting from Southeastern Montana, Louisiana State? I'm sure it wasn't 4K quality either.
You gotta have the glasses on for that one. Okay, you gotta have the glasses on. You gotta be close to the screen. You really gotta be the paper's over here. I mean, you really gotta be locked in, close to the screen on that one.
I like he's one because of the physical tools that I think a team will take. What do you think he goes? Late day two, early day three?
Oh, probably fourth. Yeah, probably fourth.
Fourth round.
I would take him in the fourth round too.
And if you're talking about a fourth round wide receiver, then he is a developmental guy. Like he's a developmental guy, and he's coming from a lower level of competition. I think the athleticism and the size will give him enough leash to where you could wait that out to see if he'll ever become something.
Yeah, I mean, again, like Dante Thornton went in the fourth round, early in the fourth round, you know, right? Like Dante Thornton went early in the fourth round, which is great. That was awesome. But just don't throw him out there and start him day one. You know, Dante Thornton averaged 9 yards per game this past year. I was shocked because I've been compiling like some data on receivers and stuff like that. I mean, he did like nothing. It was crazy. Just what an outrageous thing that the Raiders did to this guy. I honestly feel bad. So hopefully that doesn't happen to Bryce Lance. Hopefully he gets a shot to actually grow and develop coming from a lower level of competition there. Okay, let's wrap this up with our Diamond in the Rough segment. I'm going to throw out just some more names here. You tell me if one of these guys, just one of them, really stands out to you. I'm not finished charting all of these guys, but I've seen all of them at least. Jacoby Lane, Brennan Thompson, Dazon Stribling, Josh Cameron, and Kevin Coleman Jr. And I'll also cede the floor to you if there's someone else on that list that's not on that list that you would rather rather throw out as a guy to flag plant as opposed to any of these dudes.
The answer is no. the answer okay. is unequivocally no. The one that I'll say has the superpower, and what's so crazy about just how a season plays out, there is somebody on this list who is projected to by some people to be the top receiver in this class coming into the year. There's someone on this list that people thought would be a top one, two, or three receiver in this class on this list.
Who?
Jacoby Lane.
Oh.
That was the guy. If you look at anything coming into the season, I don't care what service you look at, Matt. It was not Mekhi Lemon. It was Jacoby Lane. That was the guy that people thought was going to be the one to really kind of push through and be the guy. And then here we are. He's in the diamond in the rough category. If I had to pick one with the superpower, it'd be Brennan Thompson, because he's an absolute monster speed player. He led the SEC in receiving this year, was a highly touted prospect when he committed to Texas coming out of high school. And it's track speed that translates on field. He has to hit a spot that's going to use that vertical field stretcher. It's not going to be consistent. He's the one that I think might get drafted a little bit higher than people think right now because of the speed. But you're talking about a small player, 4.26. We've seen these kind of guys play out before. But the production led the SEC in receiving, elite speed. If a team takes him and throws him out there, maybe a better for best ball dart throw candidate. If I had to pick one, it would be Brennan Thompson, because and when you chart him, Matt, I don't know if you have or not, like you'll walk away and you'll be like, damn, this dude is not bad, but he's a smaller player. And I know how this archetype normally plays out, but if I had to pick one, it would be him.
Yeah, Brennan Thompson's interesting. He could be a little bit like Calvin Austin from a reception perception standpoint, where it's like, oh, that's a tiny guy, but like they actually ask him to play real deal receiver and like go down the football field and play on the outside. He's primarily an outside receiver. He's definitely a one side of the field guy, 5'9", 164, but like he outruns the entire defense. So definitely there's a lot of speed there. Just again, like what's the role for him? But yeah, Calvin Austin was sort of a comparable player from a charting standpoint to a guy like Brennan Thompson. And obviously Calvin Austin has had some moments in the league. One guy I thought was interesting actually was Dazon Stribling. I mean, he is, I'm not going to say I'm flag planting there or anything like that, but he's got some interesting movement skills, I would say, on tape. And obviously the athleticism was strong there, good size, speed, the whole deal. So he could maybe, if he goes on day three, he would at least be somebody like, oh, I'm interested. He could maybe be a little something something. But yeah, the rest of the guys on this list, like Jacoby Lane seems like a sacrificial X to me. Josh Cameron, very up and down player. Kevin Coleman Jr., maybe like a nice slot receiver, workman type guy, just hangs onto a roster spot. We'll see. So I would say, in summation of this entire two-part receiver preview here, Ray, I think we've got an interesting group of potential first round players, maybe like six-ish guys could push for the first round this year. And then I think day two, like second round, third round, there's a lot of potential flavors there that might get interesting. And then I think, you know, day three, there's some interesting dart throws and stuff like that. But, some volatility, obviously, in the profiles that we discussed here.
I would just say my parting words on this portion of the wide receiver class, I wouldn't be too tethered or tied to any of these guys, right, that we talked about today. I think a lot of them will be situation dependent, opportunity dependent. And just like we've seen good rookie wide receivers come in and then the team upgrades that position in the following year. I mean, Devontae Smith went out there and damn near had 1,000 yards as a rookie, and they turned right around and traded for A.J. Brown. T. Higgins, they went out and got Ja'Marr Chase. So with this range of receiver, when we're talking sleepers and potential breakout candidates, these are some of the profiles that look interesting, but I don't want to lean on this. I don't want to straddle the fence, but when and where they get drafted are going to be huge, Matt. Huge.
Right. Do they fit the system? Is there a role available for a guy like Antonio Williams, who we both clearly liked? But like, is there a role available for him, or is he going to be like a 60% snap player because they don't really use the slot? Is a team going to look at Malachi Fields and be like, that's our X receiver and he can't get open at the NFL level? Like these guys that we like parts of their games, it really is just going to come down. Like destination really is destiny at this position so often. Even if we don't want to admit that, it is the truth. Like destination is destiny, and then how they're able to fit into those roles really is what matters. Ray, appreciate you, man. This was a great two-part preview on the wide receiver. I love how we attack this from kind of the similar angles, but also very different in some ways. So I think the listeners will really get a lot out of these two shows. Tell the people what you're working on as we come into the final couple weeks here of pre-draft prep.
We're just trying to get it through, baby. We're just trying to make it through. Check out all the content on the YouTube channel at RayGQ. Follow me on X at RayGQ, and then continue to do stuff with you, Matt, over here at Yahoo. I won't be on next week. I got the Stranger Things. I'm going to New York for a day to go see the Stranger Things play. So I'll be out next week, but I'll be back the week following, and then we'll finish it up.
Incredible. Yeah. Nate Tice will be stepping in for you to do the tight end / offensive line preview. That will be next week. But we've got plenty more coming up before we get to that show, because on Monday, yes, we have a very special guest for Mock Draft Monday, and very special treat, a live show of Mock Draft Monday. That's so it's not going to be in your feeds right on Monday morning for your commute, but it's worth the wait because the creator of the Beast himself is going to join the pod live at noon Eastern. That's right. The Athletic's Dane Brugler joins the show. So reminder, Mock Draft Monday is really going to be recorded on Monday live at noon Eastern. So not in your audio feed right away, but don't worry. It's going to be in there shortly after because we've got a great group of producers that are going to turn that thing around. So come right here and join us live instead of waiting for the pod live on YouTube Monday morning, Monday at noon Eastern. Okay. Could be morning for you West Coast folks. Get out of bed. Okay. Get your coffee, get out of bed and watch some Mock Draft Monday. All right. And subscribe to the YouTube channel while you're at it. So until then, we'll see you on Monday. We are out.